Coming up in this episode, what are boutique hotels, why people are becoming more and more fascinated with them, and check out the deal that we're working on right now. Welcome to the Military Millionaire Podcast, where we teach service members, veterans, and their families how to build wealth through personal finance, entrepreneurship, and real estate investing. I'm your host, David Perret, and together with my co-host, Alex Felice, we're here to be your no BS guides along the most important mission you'll ever embark on, your finances.
Vehicle 1, you're clear to depart friendly lines.
Roger, Vic 1, Oscar Mike. What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Military Millionaire Podcast. I'm not going to do any sponsor bullshit. Look, I'd love if you could leave a review on your favorite platform if you get some value out of the show. That's really the only metric for those platforms to think, hey, this show's worth growing. And so I'd really appreciate that. Thank you for taking a moment to do that. Today's guest is a good friend of mine, Blake Daly. He's been in the War Room Mastermind for really since inception, and we've gotten to do international travel together. We've gone to a bunch of events together. We've gotten to know each other really, really, really well. And I've gotten to watch him go from buying a house hack to boutique hotel, boutique hotel, boutique hotel, boutique hotel, selling the lot, moving into a big 130 key unit property that we're working on right now. And now we're partners, and it's just been really, really, really cool journey to watch and be a part of. And he's a stand-up dude, played football for the Air Force Academy, just retiring from the military right now, and or transitioning out of the military right now, and just crushing it in the boutique hotel space and Airbnb short-term rental space. And we're gonna have some fun. So let's dig in right now. What's up, everybody? Blake just hopped in, and the first thing I told him was, we're not going to prep anything. We're going to rock and roll because we're buddies. So this is the start, and so Blake's been on the show before. So you guys have heard the basic intro about how he was like some skinny wide receiver for the Air Force Academy, and then just talking shit. What, you were in a linebacker
for breakfast? Yeah, middle linebacker.
There you go, middle linebacker. All right, so he was a big old boy, played for the Air Force Academy. Then he is in 2 days. Is it 2 days? 2 days. From now?
Yep.
Two days from now, he will not be on active duty anymore, and he will be living life. So, congrats, and thank you. I'll let you give like the quick recap for who Blake is and how we get to today, yeah. And then let's dig into what we're currently working on together because we got some cool stuff going.
Yeah, I think looking back in retrospect, when I had the podcast, I had you on. I think this might be my first time on the Military to Millionaire podcast. So.
Oh,
I'd like to be the first to welcome me here. Thank you.
Well, then spend a whole lot more time talking about all the things everybody cares about, like where you grew up.
That's good. I'll do the abbreviated version of that, and we can get into the goods. So, grew up in Indiana, went to the small town, middle of Indiana, and went to the Air Force Academy football scholarship. That was kind of like my ticket out of small town Indiana, right? Like that. That song, Just a Small Town Boy, like all you want to do is get out of your small town.
That song is definitely Just a Small Town Girl. It's only like
with the one second of the most verse, small pop- town boy, born all right, all right, all right. Come on, dude. Come on. That's like your era of music. Maybe a little bit older, but
damn. But yeah, I'm not that much older than you.
Yeah, you got a few more gray.
What are you like 20? You're 26, 28.
27.
Yeah, see? I sandwiched it.
Once you get past 25 and you can like get a rental car, it's like that's all you need anymore.
There's well, nothing I check to be, that box.
Yeah. I guess when I get 35 I can run for Congress or whatever.
I'm not there yet.
Went to the Air Force Academy to play football, played all 4 years, worked my way up to starting a few games my senior year, was never a very good football player, was always like the unathletic try hard, like got out there, got my steps in at the beginning of practice, like took everything I had just to start a few games. But after football, like I got six, seven hours a day back, and I was like, man, I gotta find something to do at this time, and knew I wanted to get into business. And like read Rich Dad Poor Dad around that time, like real estate's the thing that I'm gonna do, right? The Purple Bible kind of started it all. And threw that time back into like digging into bigger pockets, learning how to do creative strategies because I knew I had no money, right? I had to find ways to do seller financing or lease options or whatever, wholesaling, and did all those things at the beginning. Used the VA loan to buy my first one down in Panama City. I think we were traveling through Italy at the time. Like, we have 60 days in between when we graduate the academy and when we report to our first duty station. We just call it 60 days. And we get paid as lieutenants, but we have no responsibilities because we don't have to report yet. So a lot of us go, like a lot of people went to, you know, Southeast Asia and all across the world. We went to Europe with my buddies. So we were traveling through like Trieste, Italy, I think, and found this house with a mother-in-law suite. And I was like, we could probably figure that out. And I was like, in between, you know, about to throw my backpack on and go jump on the train, I was like, oh, let's put in the offer. And got it under contract and ended up closing that one. And the whole mother-in-law suite thing was like, it had the extra kitchen, had the separate entrance. I was like, it's not quite a duplex. It's smaller. It's not going to do well as a long-term rental. And then decided, because me and Nicole, it would stay in like these little Airbnbs, basements, mother-in-law units, whatever, when we traveled, because we were cheap, broke college kids. I was like, I think this will do decent. We probably rent it like $70 a night, be like 70-75% occupied, and at least cover the mortgage and everything. And then we did that, covered all the living expenses and cash flow to live in that first house. Like, had positive cash flow after Wi-Fi, after utilities, after everything. I was like, oh, dude, this is pretty cool. And then we kind of fell into that niche, buying these houses with guest houses. And that's how we surpassed our the W-2 income with our cash flows, buying these houses with guest houses. In the first 13 months, we bought, I think, 5 or 6 of them, had 11 units. And I was like, man, we need to go bigger. And then bought a commercial multifamily, helped raise the money for that. I wasn't the main operator, but was a partner on the deal, got exposure to it, learned how to underwrite deals, learned how to do a bigger raise with more LPs, limited partners, and learned the whole commercial side. And after that, it got pretty competitive pretty quickly with like all the big institutions pouring into the multifamily asset class. And then pivoted with what I knew well, short-term rentals, managing my Airbnbs, and the commercial side. I was like, I could probably do a hotel. Let's give this a test. And 6 hotels later, here we are.
Yeah, I love it. And for record, Blake is the operator on the hotel right outside the Smokies that you've heard me talk about a couple times on the show that we just closed on. So we'll talk more about that deal here in a little bit. But before we do, I'm curious. So you mentioned kind of briefly like, oh yeah, you know, I didn't want to get into multifamily. I like the short-term rental thing. So we kind of scaled that out a little bit, but there's a lot of other benefits to it. So I'd be curious to hear you speak as a guy who runs a high level mastermind group on boutique hotels specifically, like why you like that asset class.
Well, what got me into multifamily, kind of led into the hotels, was backing up to kind of give the preface of this answer is like, I managed the STR houses, long-term rentals, like all over Bay County in the panhandle of Florida when we lived there, is Panama City Beach. So we had all these houses all over the place. And I, you know, when you're starting out, oftentimes like you self-manage, you're trying to do everything yourself, save money, like have higher cash flow. We did that. And once you get up to like that 10-ish unit range, we're at 11 at the time, but like once you get to that range, like you're kind of at the peak or like at the cap of what you can do yourself when you're still working a full-time job, especially in the military when you've got demands and like you know you have to be there. You can't just like slip out to go deal with tenant issues. So that was kind of like the capacity of what I could do myself. So I really like the economies of scale of multifamily, right? You can buy a 70-unit apartment complex roughly right in that range. And it has the income to have on-site management, on-site leasing office. It's, you know, you're basically buying a business that runs itself. And it, as the operator of that, you're really an asset manager and you're just managing your cash flow, making sure the property manager is filling up vacancies. It's much easier to run because of the scale of that. And that's the same reason why I like hotels, is because of the efficiency and the scale. So really, really bullish on that right now. Anything that you can buy that has, you know, I think your kind of minimum threshold is like 500K, give or take, of revenue that you really need to cover all your operating expenses, including labor costs, plus your debt, and then still have a pretty decent profit margin yourself. And like, you're going to start with, you know, just your cleaners and your contract and maintenance, and then you work up to getting your property level staff, and then you can work up to getting the whole, you know, company level staff like I have on the whole management company that manages everything. So because of the like the built-in efficiency, similar to that transition from like single family into multifamily, you have that same thing with short-term rentals into hotels. That's much easier to manage.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And, you know, I love, we've talked about this before, I love the short-term rental game, but they just
keep getting slapped. Yeah, I mean, the cash flow is hard to beat, honestly, right? If you're going from buying long-term rentals and short-term rentals, you're going to make more cash flow. It's just a factor of how much more are you working, and is that return on time there for you?
Taxes and regulations getting slapped on it that, you know, I'm getting taxed more than a hotel right now in my market. They just added like a 5% tax on top of all the other stuff. And I'm like,
yeah, in Florida, you got state, county, city tax, right? That you have to pay for your TOT taxes. But the cool thing is with the hotels though, like, for your residential Airbnbs, they can tack on all these taxes, right? As long as it gets voted and goes through, they can also do the same with regulation of saying, hey, we're not going to let short-term rentals operate in Springfield anymore, or this neighborhood of Springfield, or any R1 zone properties in this area, is because those, you know, the municipalities want to protect the single family space and like the rental market and all that for protecting the neighborhoods. So they don't like, you know, STRs being next door, both hotels, they're zoned for it. So you don't have the same worry. You don't have the same risk of your business and your cash flow getting tapped off or shut off because of the regulation. So another cool thing about hotels too.
Absolutely. Love it. All right. So you decide to go this route. You start scaling into the boutique hotel space. You've been in Florida. You've been in Tahoe. We've now got this hotel in the Smoky Mountains. So let's just like, we'll just use the most recent one, you know, what has been kind of the game plan with all these? Are you buying properties that are like beautiful, luxury, need nothing, class A, move in ready and being like, it's boutique? Or are you buying things that, you know, and
I haven't like yet. I think the first hotels were a stretch to call them boutique hotels. I think that kind of encompasses the asset class of, you know, these commercial short-term rentals that are operating kind of like as boutique hotels, right? You could have 8 cabins on one property, like the one that went to go see in Pigeon Forge the last time we were in Tennessee together, right? That's kind of like all encompassing of the asset class of boutique hotels, multiple units on one site that operate with more, you know, with more scale, that are a little bit more, more in depth on the operations than your typical STR. So, the first ones are more like roadside motels or like beachside motels in Florida, in Tahoe as well. One was actually, two of mine have been multifamilies that we converted over, but the rest have been like the exterior corridor motels. You know, either you're parking close to where your room is, or you're, you know, parking, walking through a corridor and then going into where the exterior door is to get inside your unit. So that's kind of like setting the stage. If you've ever been to like these coastal beach towns, you see the little motels that are single story, usually like flat roofs, you know, concrete block, like that was the first hotels. And the reason is because we got such great deals on these properties at the time. Like, when I got started buying hotels, it was like hospitality as an asset class and the niche was really hurting, but also, a lot of people weren't seeing what was happening in Panama City Beach during COVID. It's like the beaches were full. Like COVID didn't exist unless you were like 70 plus in Florida. But all the people were out of the beaches. And then Tahoe was kind of the same thing. Like you had, you know, you got Reno, you got Carson City, Sacramento, San Francisco. And that's like the mountain destination for those locations. So everybody wanted to go up to hike, go to the lake, you know, go ski in the winter when they'd been stuck inside and in the city all day. So like Tahoe is the escape for that. So those locations did really, really well during that time. We got great deals on them. But now as we've like, I sold that portfolio and have kind of moved on. And my goal is to buy nicer and nicer places and better submarkets, you know, be really on the X where people want to go. So Tremont is still exterior corridor, but it's not a motel. Like it's just an exterior corridor 10 unit resort, right? You have your different parking areas, and then every building's 2 stories. You walk up, you know, the steps or down the walkway and go to your room, because of how spread out it is. So I wouldn't really call that one a motel. It's definitely more of a hotel and resort, just exterior corridor. So that one's definitely a nicer asset and is more of a resort style property. We're gonna have F&B on site. We've got a wedding and event venue. We're adding all these cool amenities. So that's definitely a step up in the asset class. I would call this one probably my first one's like C class. This one definitely B class. I want to work up to buy an A class in super premium areas. And
I'm gonna pause you for a second. We're gonna go back in time and pretend we aren't Air Force, and you're gonna explain the FNB acronym. Oh, I know FNB, what you're talking about. All right, thank you.
Yeah,
it was like you like so fast. I was like, you just lost somebody. Took me so long. When you guys when we were at the hotel, and you and Mary Kate were talking about the event venue, and you guys were like FNB and this and that. Da, 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 da. I was like,
yeah,
do what?
Yeah,
what
are we? What, we I have no idea what we're talking about. It's very similar to the military, right? Just a lot of acronyms we throw around, right? The OPR, the Overall Property Rating, the ABR, the I forget what that one actually is.
Average percentage rate or whatever.
Better correct anyway. But yeah.
Well, yeah, and then for analyzing a hotel, it's totally different too. You've got the ADR, like your average daily rate, and you've got – actually, we should probably talk about that. But before we dig into like some of the differences when you're analyzing a hotel property, because there are some anomalies. Yeah, I love Tremont, dude. Like it is – I mean, for anyone listening, we'll drop a link in the show notes. But this is a log cabin style property that we bought that is 2 miles outside of the Smoky Mountains. It has a wedding venue. It has, I mean, every kind of guest suite you could want, including 4 that have a jacuzzi mid room. We've got a massive renovation, but
the honeymoon, there's going to be so much like conceiving happening in those rooms.
Oh my God. Renovated. Yeah. I don't even want to know. And then 3 pools, hot tubs, food, you know, the works. It's a great place. It's right across the street from a distillery that's owned by the guy who, one of the original, like just, or not one of the head distillers of Jack Daniels. I think he was like the 12th head distiller, the 7th head distiller. And he left and started his own distillery. There's some good food place. Like it's a cool location. And
their bourbon is like award-winning. Like this is a cool, cool little
stuff. Got it up here. Like, it's nice.
It's small. It's a little sleepy, but it is for a smaller hospitality market like this. There's a lot of cool, a lot of cool things there, and tons of people that come through. And it's also growing too. Like I think we're starting to see the spillage from the spur from like Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge. More people coming to this side, which they call the peaceful side of the Smokies. And it's really where like people want to go to not be in the swarm of all the touristy crap, you know, the traffic, like you can't get around Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge in like June and July. Right. It's so all the same natural things to do, like the natural beauty or attractions or whatever, horseback riding, tubing, hiking, mountain biking, all this awesome stuff to do. The national parks right there. It's a very good spot. This is definitely an upgrade from the first hotels.
Yeah, we've got a $3 million renovation budget, and I joke with you all the time that we don't need it. I'm like, I would stay in this hotel as is. And you're like, yeah, but it's going to be nice. I'm like, I'm not classy enough to care about it.
Be picture worthy. Yeah.
Yeah. The new photos you guys put up on the website are phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah. It's like, man, I'm so in between on them because like the photos are good quality, but it's like the legacy rooms or like the current rooms, whatever you want to call them. So it's like, it's like a really good photo of like a girl that's a 6. You know what I mean? Like that's a really good photo. But she's not
and we're getting canceled. Are you fat shaming like on my podcast? I mean,
whatever you're looking at is like whatever thing you're attracted to. That's a 6.
Oh man, how do you know it's a 6? No, my house cleaner, who I thought had finished and left prior to starting this because I couldn't see her. Mm. Had been cleaning the ADU, I guess. And so she's like, I'm done. Just letting you know. So, I had to pay her real quick. It's like, oh.
Yeah. Just bring her on like a guest appearance. I'm like, hey, what do you think about Airbnb investing? Let's talk about hotels.
Well, that's not actually my Airbnb cleaner. That is my, hey, what if I brought in someone to clean the house every other week and do laundry so I don't have to worry about changing out the bed sheets?
Oh, that's perfect. Mm. I have one of those. It's like halfway there. It's called a wife. She gives me grief though. She's like, you're not doing your part.
I fired mine. Fired my wife.
I'm stuck with mine. I like her. She likes me, I think, anyway. So
yeah, actually, I guess it'd probably be fair to say my wife quit. Different circumstances. Yeah, but
that was a unique scenario.
Handed in her 2 weeks.
Yeah. Nicole gives me that. I'm gonna throw it back in her face. Like, you're not going anywhere, girl.
You can't quit. You signed the contract.
Yeah. Hey, just to be like, you know, sensitive to the audience here, not because she can't, she's a strong, independent woman. Okay. Support whatever she wants to do.
Oh yeah. But sometimes they just choose not to.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is going to be it. Like, talking about your wife as a house cleaner. We're talking about sixes and great photos. That's true, though. I mean, I'm a six with a good photo, so, you know, it works.
Maybe that's why Tremont resonates so well.
That's why I love it.
Like,
that's why I love it
like
so much.
Recognizes like, yeah.
Oh, man. All right. So, I think we talked about this before, but just, you know, even though it's on the podcast, just before we forget, we should definitely put in Tesla superchargers because there aren't any in that town and they draw.
Yeah. You know, I found out the hard way because we got our two accounts turned off, but we have eight or nine different electric accounts at that property. And one is for that, for building F, like the middle of the property that has its own driveway. Shut up, Siri. Has its own driveway right in the middle. So like we could have the Tesla charger or the Teslas pull up there, pull from the electrical from that building and put in those drip chargers. They have them at Dancing Bear. So as our competition, we need to get that. And I think they have one. So I think if we put in like two or three, because we have a lot more units, we have like three or four times the units as that property. So we're like, come on guys, bring your Teslas. We got you covered. Plus I also, me and Nicole now have a Tesla. So yeah. We're going back and forth from the property. We'll need to juice up driving back and forth from Knoxville.
I have learned very quickly that the businesses that have those when I'm road tripping are brilliant. Like I went to St. Louis this past week, I had to stop halfway real quick to charge for like 30 minutes. And which honestly I love. Like I thought I would hate that as a, you know, I'm a habitual road tripper, like drive 600 miles before I stop and I grab gas and I'm on the road again. But I really like having to stop and walk around a little bit every 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's actually really, really good for my mental health and
exercise. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then like I can actually film, like I figured out how to film videos like in the car. So I'll like make some content and stuff. So like, it's very productive for me.
Love it.
But like, for example, the one in Rolla is in the parking lot of a barbecue joint. So I'm like, I've been driving for 2.5 hours. I didn't eat lunch.
Barbecue.
And
we've been driving both ways. We use a place to stay. We'll just,
yeah, that's exactly it. If you had Tesla superchargers there, it would literally direct people.
Right? You're gonna show up on, you know,
when you were the. Well, yeah, because you're still new to it. When you get in the car and you type in a location, it will automatically direct you through superchargers based on when you need to charge. And so it would literally put people out of their way to stay at the hotel.
Yeah, that'd be sick. And I think we have to do like two or more. I just think that'd be really good because I've only done this one time. I've charged the car one time. We flew into Knoxville. We did stuff at the hotel. And on Saturday, we went to pick it up. And then we flew out on Sunday. So we just put it in storage. But I had to fill it up. Is that the right term? How to charge it? How to charge it up, not fill it up. How to charge it up. And there was like four or five other Teslas that all were in the shopping center. Everybody walked around to the shops and everything, especially if that building is like the F&B or the food and beverage of where we have snacks and drinks and, you know, a little sandwich shop in there.
Yeah.
Good little extra source of revenue. Like while the chest is charging up, check out here. You get greeted by the nice warm Southern hospitality. And then they're like, oh man, we got to, they see the pickleball courts right over there, the playground, the putt-putt. They're going to be like, man, this place is cool.
That's cool. Those pickleball courts are going to be sick. Yeah. So, okay. So walk us through what we're going to be doing with the renovation on this bad boy.
Yeah, so we actually start in like 30 days. They're submitting to USDA. I thought they were going to do it Friday, but I just got word that they're doing it like today/tomorrow. So it's essentially a 30-day timeline from then. So our likely close date will be like the April, you know, 19th or the 22nd, because that's like a Friday or Monday. So we'll say 30 days from now. And we're going to start out. We did find at post due diligence, post closing, this was like January, we had our plumbing back up. And found out it was because roots were all through our drain line. And it was something that I had missed in due diligence because we got the line scoped. Like in every building, we got line scoped, but they didn't go all the way to the drain line. So like we spot checked because I've had these older hotels where we've had these problems before. But they just didn't go far enough. So still missed it. So next time we're going all the way to the you know, sewer connection or the septic.
No more
tanks.
Just the tip with the plumbing.
Yeah. Yeah. We did just the tip. That was, that was bad.
Oh man.
But that was like added like $180,000 to completely replumb building one and two, which are the only cast iron ones. So that's going to start probably, if we can swing it with the plumber, it'll probably start a week before closing just to give us a little bit more runway and they won't need like their first draw until closing. So that's, they can work, kind of build up the labor costs and we'll pay them for that past week at closing once we get that close date. And then buildings one and two, which is a total of 22 units. will be renovated. So it'll be about a 30-day process to work their way through, you know, essentially unit 1 through 22 in that first phase. And then the designers will come in right behind them, refurnish them. And then me and Nicole will be there for that time frame to help and make sure everything goes smoothly. That's why we're moving to the Knoxville area. So we're going to be around this bigger project and make sure it goes how we expect it to. Then we'll be doing the light renovation in the venue, adding in the bar in there for our weddings and events so people can get drinks downstairs and upstairs, a two-story venue there. So that'll be a good addition. And then our lobby and gym go in that phase one as well. So like we'll be doing a new like wood slap background. Can I share on here?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone watching the video will be able to check it out.
I'll pull this up because the lobby is going to look super cool. Hell and yeah. Just way more welcoming. And like, it just, as soon as you walk in, just a completely different vibe. We can cut out this, me just pausing real quick, but you haven't seen this either. So
yeah, no, I'm excited. While we're cutting things out, am I allowed to subtly mention that you might still have a little room for investors? I'll just ask you.
Does the SEC listen to podcasts?
I will literally just be like, are you still taking investors in this or other projects if somebody was looking? And you can be like, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I can't pull it up. Mm. The link expired. Why did the link expire?
Unprepared.
Maybe I had it up yesterday. Maybe it'll have like my things that I just had open. Nope, definitely does not. Well, that's some BS. So anyway, yeah, so the lobby and the gym will all be done in that same phase. And we essentially get, you know, the first big amenity of the weight room done, the fresher look of the lobby when people come in. Like, I think that'll make the statement of, you know, especially the people that have been coming there before, we have a lot of repeat guests there, will make the statement of, hey, this is a new place now, right? We're in a new
ownership. Where are you putting the weight room? Or the
it'll gym. Be like right above the office. I don't think you saw that one, but we can like, it has the load because it's like rebar floors, concrete, like 10 inch thick floors. So we can have all the, and that's actually a really cool feature about the hotel. Like that's how the buildings were poured, all eight of them. So you don't have the noise from people above you. Like you still get, if people are bumping into the walls or screaming in the unit next to you, like you'll still hear that muffled sound, but
it's not like my Airbnb where I can tell you how many kids but you don't hear around.
The footsteps and everything. That was probably the biggest complaint of our other two-story hotel, was because it was just like wood framed floors with LVP flooring. So like every step you heard, it was dog friendly too. So you heard the paws on the floor above. So I'm really happy this one doesn't have this, because I knew that was going to be future complaints. But yeah, it'll essentially go right above the offices. I think it's like 1400 square feet up there. Like it'll be a big open space with wraparound windows overlooking the mountains. It'll be nice.
Yeah, I love the view. I love the location. I love all of that stuff. I guess we should probably, rather than like going super detailed on the renovation, let's just like talk basic strategy. I mean, like if we sum up, like, you know, essentially when I tell people, I'm like, dude, the hotel was mismanaged by somebody who lived in the hotel, lived on site, mom and pop, did his minimal, you know, basically sucked all the capital out of the property rather than reinvesting. Yeah. And there's so much opportunity in just a quick facelift. Google reviews, social media, Google ads, getting it on all third-party booking platforms, which was missing. That was immediately what I saw when I was looking at it. I was like, dude, they got no social media presence. They've got
dude, if we did no renovation, we'd probably still make $2 million in equity of just operational improvements over the first year. Like just like, well, I mean, we'd still have to fix up the deferred maintenance. So we'd have to put maybe, you know, couple hundred grand into that to like fix the actual stuff that needed it. But from a revenue standpoint, we wouldn't do essentially anything different other than operate the hotel better, you know, reinvest in maintenance. Like when something breaks, we would fix it. We would, you know, do the landscaping. We'd have better trained, you know, customer service and staff on the hotel. We would have, you know, better processes for ordering our linens and replacing damaged linens and taking them off from the laundry room on one side of the property and redistributing them out over the eight buildings, so that the housekeepers are going just to that closet in each building to turn the units faster to get the labor cost down, right? So we'd both decrease the expenses and increase the income by going wide with the listing distribution, right? All the OTAs, Expedia, which they were not on, Airbnb, which they were not on, hotels.com, they were not on, Agoda, they were not on, TripAdvisor, okay, they were not on, like they weren't anywhere. Like you could only find them if you, you know, knew it was there. So they had no outbound marketing, no social media going on, just no way.
The only social media thing that we found was that YouTube video, which was a guy,
the one
local dude in the area who came by.
We still have to get back.
He showed all the interesting things going on with the place. And then he ended the video by saying, but the bathroom was so dirty, I asked for my money back and I'm staying somewhere else. And I'm like, ooh, that's not good. Yeah. But that's an easy fix.
Like 3,000 or 5,000 reviews. That's like, you know, 3,000 or 5,000 more people who now think that that's a dirty hotel.
Yeah.
But I mean, those are the value add things. So like we didn't even, you know, the huge value out of where we're doubling or more the value of this over the next like 3 to 4 years to be able to refi and get all of our investor capital back and still hold on for, you know, double digit cash on cash return every year, plus sell it for a big payday in the future. Like, how we achieve that is by doing the renovation. But if you, you know, if you found a smaller deal and if you just did the basics of operate better and better listing distribution and marketing and better customer service, a little bit better quality rooms of like the actual product, the product that you're providing your customer, your guest, is the room itself. So if you clean that up, provide great service and get out there where people are actually looking to stay, like that is the operational pieces. When I walked this property, when I got to meet the staff on site and the manager on site, like instantly I saw, I was like, dude, there's a lot of value. There's a lot of meat on the bone here because it was, those are the exact things, you know, we did on the last five hotels that added the value to those hotels.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a fan for sure. You know, people have probably heard me talk about it on the show, but I own another hotel and it's much less the boutique. I mean, it's small, it's whatever, but it's just, it's not in the best location, right? Which is, it could be a lot worse. It could be a lot better. But it's just your typical, like it was a Comfort Inn, 40 unit, mom, pop, pool, hot tub, you know, continental breakfast hotel. And it's probably worth 1.2. We paid 9 for it. So, you know, it's a good little deal, but I love this. Like it took me a long time trying to learn everything the hard way to understand like a good live-in manager and a good, you know, system and teams, and we've improved a million things. And, you know, we put probably $300K into like roof HVAC, CapEx stuff over the last couple of years. And now we're pretty much done on all that. And it's going to just be good things going forward because we've basically got a new building. But this one I love because there wasn't anything major wrong with it. It was just issues with people and it was outdated. Yeah. Like I mean, the first night, we're staying in the place. And I was like, dude, we're going to update this. I would stay in this room right now as is and be totally fine. This is nice.
Yeah. And I think in Building 5's defense, like Building 5 is a pretty good room. Like those are the family suites with like the living room, the bathroom in the middle, and then the bedroom in the back. And those beds are super comfortable in that building too. Like that's one thing that we don't have to buy with the new renovation is new beds because they're pretty new. And I sleep great every time I'm there. I don't know if it's because I'm working like, you know, 14, 16 hour days and walking all around the 10 acres the whole time, but I sleep like a baby there.
Yeah. I'm excited. Okay. So for someone listening to this, they want to get into boutique hotels. It is becoming a little bit more popular, more trendy, but there's not a whole lot of like topics, books, things on this. Where would you recommend they go to start learning about this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Because I didn't have, I mean, I guess the short answer is like the stuff I put out now, I really try to release just free information. Like my whole thing is like, how do I make my like YouTube videos about boutique hotels, like my Instagram posts better than other people's paid stuff? If there's other stuff out there like that, which I still don't know if there is. There's a couple other masterminds on it, but I think as far as
pretty novice.
Yeah. Like don't have that many deals. I mean, if those guys ever hear those, love those guys, you know, great marketers. but yeah, it's like, how do I share like the real stories of going through this experience now with six different hotels of like buying the renovating the operations? Like I operate, like I own the management company as well. So I don't outsource this. I don't hire like people in my business that I train and oversee and manage are the ones who do these things within the business of managing the hotels. And I've done it all myself. Like when we started, we didn't have the revenue to be able to hire this stuff out. And like, as we scaled up, I would outsource the things that I was doing and just kind of delegate and elevate. So I try to give all that with my free content. But there's not a book on it yet. Maybe that's something I need to do in the near future, just document everything in my head and kind of build out the niche a little bit more. But I think the first thing that you could do is find a, like, if you're looking for hotels, like, you don't necessarily need to find a market. You need to find a criteria, because this can work anywhere as long as you have, like I was saying, you're not looking for a unit count. You're looking for like a revenue threshold. Like, you need 500K plus to really operate at a distance efficiently. So find your criteria of like, I'm looking, you know, for 20 doors or less, 500K plus in revenue. That's a value add in a destination market, and then go look for those things and just start looking at deals. Like, you're never going to get familiar enough. You're never going to feel comfortable unless you go through the process of learning how to underwrite these. And I have a free underwriting sheet. I think you can get it like on my Instagram profile.
No sales pitches on this show.
But I'm just saying, it's like absolutely free. It's like, there's nothing to sell there. It's like, just download it, because if you're analyzing a hotel and like gross revenue numbers and don't know how to do it, like, you're going to miss numbers. And like, so many times, even the people in my mastermind, before they really get comfortable with underwriting the deals, I have to, you know, point out and pick out where they're missing numbers that, because your value is based on your NOI, like, make a huge difference in the valuation of your property. So it's not something that you want to miss if you're trying to go it your own way. And, you know, you think you're going to have a $2 million property, but your NOI ended up being a lot lower because your expenses were a lot higher. And the NOI is an operating income, by the way. So that's what your valuation's based on. And if that's lower, your value is going to be lower. So,
For reference, for anyone listening, 500K is not as much revenue as you think. Like, a hotel puts out, the numbers can be daunting for anyone who's used to residential or multifamily, because you can put out way more money revenue wise on a 40 unit hotel than you would ever do on a 40 unit apartment. 40 unit apartment, you're looking at, call it $1,000 a room. You're looking at 40K a month. Okay. That same thing could do, I mean, it could be a massive for our 40 unit. We've been, you know, we did, like I said, it's not as busy as it, we thought it'd be. So we probably average, we probably only need 20, 25 doors most of the time. So we'll call it, yep. Let's say it's a 20 unit. We're averaging 300 and, well, we broke 330 last year in revenue. But if we did the same thing as a apartment complex, we would, in our market, like, we wouldn't even get close to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of gives you where, like, you're going to, including your labor expense, you're probably going to operate somewhere between a 50 to a 60%
expense
margin.
Ratio.
Yeah. Expense ratio. Sorry. Yeah. Expense ratio will be, your expenses will be 50 to 60% of your revenue. So then you have debt service that comes out after that. So that's why I say, like, if, you know, you need at least 500K to be able to pay a manager somewhere in the 40 to 50, maybe 55K range to be that filter of on-site issues, to filter the issues that come from you. So you need that amount of revenue. I mean, right there, if you're paying them 50K, you're making 500K. They're 10% right there. So your other operating costs are probably, you know, in the 45% range. You're going to be on the higher end, that expense ratio. And then you have debt service coming out. So you want to make sure that, you know, you're still cash flowing for a $500,000 grossing property. You're probably paying between $1 and $2 million, depending on your market and the price per door of, you know, the cap rate of that market. So very achievable things. I mean, you know, you're not talking about $7 million, like the most recent deal. Like, you can get a well-performing, you know, hotel that you can manage pretty passively for $1 million to $2 million. And if that still sounds daunting, like, you're looking at, with a 25% down payment, somewhere in between 250 grand to 500 grand to get in that deal, plus any renovation costs and reserves. So maybe 500K all in. Yep. And I would assume most people could find, you know, five people that have 100K to go partner with on this, especially if you find a good deal. If you're going to raise money, like, syndicate it, that's 10 people with 50K. Like, the people you have in your contacts now, I'm pretty confident you can get that. Like, my first raise when I was like 23 years old, I pulled 475K. So, if you're any better than me, you know, further along when I didn't even have a professional network, like, you've got the advantage already.
And I would, for just to preface on that, you would never know who has money unless you start talking about these opportunities, because investors come out of the woodwork. And I asked Blake prior to recording, or actually mid recording, and hopefully my editor took that out like they were supposed to, whether or not he was allowed to mention investment opportunities. And and so he's still got a deal going. I don't. So, you know, if you want to invest in something like this, you know, the best thing you can do, I do have an investor form on the website, but like, just reach out to someone like Blake and build a relationship. And then you can find those opportunities when he does have one, or I can introduce you to somebody when they have one. Like, the opportunities are there. But from the other side, like, if you're looking to raise the capital, until you actually get in on a deal, which is kind of where we're at, where we can't like make investment offers or anything, you can just network with everyone. And then when the time comes, you never know who has money laying around. Like, it's always very surprising to me when I do a raise for something. I'm like, oh, well, that was like, cool, we're done. Or, you know, it's
okay, 500K just like under a pillow. Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's happened.
Or somebody that just has money like that sitting in a savings account that's making them, you know, I mean, right now they have high yield saving accounts like 4.5% to 5%, but most people just sitting in their savings account aren't earning that, somewhere, you know, percent or less. So if you can offer people, you know, a much better return, it's asset backed, right? Like, a lot of people will take that risk along with you. And it's just all based on relationships, man. Like, if you are a trustworthy person, if you carry yourself well, if you have a good track record of just being a good person, like, it's going to be like, I think you'd be surprised how easy it can be to raise money sometimes. I'm not saying it's not super difficult. I mean, we had trouble raising the full 4.1 for Tremont, but different deal, different climate. Like, 2023 was terrible for everybody raising
money. Well, and to be fair, we had all the money raised, and then we had one investor.
We raised the full amount twice, legitimately. Dip.
We had all the rest of the money raised, and then we had an investor not show up, like just ghost on closing day, and then we raised all of it again. So essentially, you needed 4.1 to close it, and we basically raised like 6.5. That's what happens. Plus. That's
3.25.
You're right.
Fell out. So,
yeah. Like, and I mean, that's what happens. Investors, you know, things happen, life happens, whatever. Like, you can't count your eggs before they hatch. So if you're doing any
until
raising,
until the wire hits the bank account. So if you're doing a raise, make sure you have wires well in advance of closing. So, which we tried to do, but it was just, you know, it got down to the wire to close before the end of the year. And had one sneak
none
out.
Of this is an offering because we don't have anything to offer you.
So yeah.
If you're with the SEC, just tune out while I tell people if you want to earn a return. I'm just kidding. Oh my God. There's so many rules about that. That was the hardest thing for me to learn when I first started. I was like, I've got this awesome network. I'm going to be able to raise all kinds of capital. And then they're like, you can only talk to people that you've documented, that you talk to and have a relationship with. And I'm like, what do you mean documented? They're like, you have to document it. I'm like, that's like, I can't raise from anybody. I'm like,
I will say, if you're in that boat, like the 506C, that's what we're talking right now, is like the difference between the 506B Bravo and the 506C Charlie. Like, with the 506C, you can only raise from accredited investors, like people who have a million plus in net worth, or make, what is it, 200,000 plus per year, 300,000 plus married. But you can advertise that. Like, you can post it on social media, you can do it on podcasts, you can, you know, tell everybody about it. But 506B for Buddy, you cannot advertise. But you can get up to 35 non-accredited investors, which, you know, if you're listening to this, you're in the military, like we were when we started raising, when we started doing deals, like, most of the people, you know, probably aren't going to be accredited yet, who would trust you to, you know, put in 25 or put in 50K to your deal. So it's like that balance of, you know, do you have the systems? Do you have the network and the brand and, you know the marketing to be able to actually market your deal and 506C be worth it? Or do you just go through your network to where you can't advertise and you just really prioritize, hey, let's set up a phone call, let's get to know each other. Like, if you focus on networking more heavily in the beginning, 506B is usually a pretty good place to start.
I agree. All right. So we've talked about kind of how you stumbled into this. We've talked about how you would recommend somebody get started if they wanted to go this route. We've talked about the deal that we're both currently in, which we love. Mm-hmm. What else do we need to talk about relating to Ooh, we need to pitch Boutique Hotel Con, which I'm going to, you know,
we can't make those pitches on this show,
shovel my way into speaking at, because you haven't announced speakers yet. So I'm going to be speaking at this event that Blake is hosting, because I'm saying it on this podcast and I'm, what's the manifesting my ass into a speaking role, even though he's got better people in his arsenal. So Blake is going to be hosting September, what, 12th to 14th?
It'll be 13th through 15th, that like Friday, Saturday, Sunday in September.
Tell us about it.
What's the vision? So Boutique Hotel Con is coming. I'm super excited for it. There's not a conference like this out there in the industry where you can get around other boutique hotel investors, learn how and what boutique hotel investing is, and really trying to provide more transparent, you know, tips and you know, education, the networking opportunities to really get a start in this niche. Like there's really not there's not a group or there's not anything out there for that yet. So trying to create that and just build a space where you can, you know, come one to a cool boutique hotel. It'll be at Tremont, like in the wedding and event venue there. So you get to actually see the tangible pieces of what we'll be talking about and how that all comes to fruition. So I think this will be a really cool, like full circle type event. We'll do tours through the hotel, show the before and afters, you know, why we went with certain renovation plans, who our guest demographic is, and, you know, the data and the metrics behind like bringing all this together. And then, you know, we have this intimate setting with the mountain views, three different pools, hot tubs, all these cool amenities, outdoor bars, pavilions, pickleball courts, like the space and fire pits. It's like the space to get everybody together and it be more a, you know, intimate networking event where you can actually sit down and talk to these people, talk to speakers, ask them questions. So we'll cap this at around 100 people. So that, like, my goal is if we have a 2-3 day conference, I get to meet 100 new people who, you know, we can talk boutique hotels with. And I want everybody that comes to do that same thing. You'll get a stay in one of the nice new renovated rooms of the hotel. So the whole thing's going to be pretty sick. So I'm excited for it. First conference. So I'm a little nervous as well, but hosted a bunch of like 40-50 person meetups down in Panama City Beach. So I'm just thinking in my head, I'm like, I'm only like 2-2.5 Xing. It's not a crazy leap.
Yep. And I'll be there. And one day, either before or after, or one evening, I'm going to do a get together for the War Room Mastermind, because half the freaking investors and people involved in this hotel are in the War Room. And so they will most likely be there to come hang out.
War Room get out for this one, which is awesome. So
yeah,
that was really cool. I'm just still so impressed by this group, man. The more it like develops, the more, you know, people I meet in it that are like, oh shoot, you've been in for like 2 years. I've been in for three. Like, how have we not like came across each other yet? And they're just some of the best like real estate connections I have coming out of that group. So if you haven't seen it yet or haven't like researched it or looked up, definitely check out the War Room Dave's Mastermind. I've been in it since the very beginning of 2019. So like over 3 years.
One of the originals,
now.
OG.
We're over 4 years now. So yeah, it's been awesome. And then I guess the last thing I didn't say was Boutique Hotel Con. BoutiqueHotelCon.com is where you can go sign up. We haven't done the ticket release yet, but you can put in your email so you'll get notified of when we do the ticket release. And that'll be coming up probably in the next like 2 to 3 weeks, probably mid-April or so, beginning of April.
Hell yeah. And you know what's a really cool, unique benefit to owning a boutique hotel? Blake doesn't have to pay to live there.
You get to travel for free, baby.
I say Blake gets to stay there.
That's
for
the
free.
Whole secret, man. You buy cool properties and cool places, and then you get to take vacations and stay at your own place right off the whole trip, stay for free. It's not too bad.
No.
Then you just got to like, keep the employees at bay when they want to ask you questions. Like, dude, I don't know. Like, my work day is tomorrow.
I'm on vacation. You see, I'm on vacation at my office. Yeah. Oh man. All right. Where can people get a hold of you if they want to learn more about the boutique hotel space or just your journey or invest with you in the future?
Because yeah, best
there are no offerings
be,
right now. So
yeah, no current offerings, but if you want to find about investing in the future, I think May or June, we were talking about this offline, Dave, but a boutique hotel fund is coming. So I really want to put more of these deals together. So next time, because we did all the raise and the deal stuff and the hiring all at the same time, I was like, that was a freaking whirlwind of stuff to do and all like through the holidays too. So I want to just focus on the fund and raise those funds for like 2-3 months, however long it takes, whatever, and then go allocate it so we can really focus on finding the best deals and all that kind of stuff. So you can hit me up about that, but the best place would be Instagram. I answer all my DMs there. I'm not like a big Instagram personality yet. So,
and that's at the Blake Daily, at Blake Daily, at
Blake J Daily.
Blake J Daily.
BlakeJDaily.com. Yep. Hit me up if you guys got any boutique hotel questions. Be happy to answer them. And we're going to talk boutique hotels all day. So it's fun.
We could, which is why half this podcast is us just ribbing each other and having a good time because we get along.
So what we do.
Blake and I have known each other forever. So Blake was in the group 4 years ago. We've been to several different conferences together. We've now invested in a hotel together. We went to Guatemala for a week together with his wife. I make it a point to visit anytime I go through Salt Lake. So it's always fun to bring a friend on. It's been really cool to watch his journey over the last few years from owning a house hack to multiple hotels, to selling a chunk and moving into this to, I mean, it's been cool. And I look forward to seeing where we go from here.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for having me on, man. I would reverberate that and say like the best part about this business is the people. Like if you put yourself around the right people who really want to support you and not, you know, be jealous of your success, but like root on your success. Like that is so fun to see. Like there's all the war room guys, like, you know, we have friends outside the war room too. Like we're the kind of people that like, how can we help push you forward? Because it's just, it's cool to see, you know, like as your network grows, it's the tide that rises all boats. So yeah, man, thank you for all the tide rising in the last 4 years as well.
I appreciate you, good sir. Have a great day.
Yeah. See ya.